number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yeah, I got this friend that I've had for years on social media. He's really profound with a lot of different things. He's pretty smart when it comes to politics. He's smart when it comes to just social commentary. He's been a DJ in radio for a long time. He's just one of those guys that has seen it all, kind of wise. Yet every time he wants to talk about sports, that's not his forte. And he always judges sports by whether or not it's just a close game. That's all he cares about. So if he's watching the NFL playoffs and the whole weekend is nothing but blowouts, he thinks the weekend is awful. He doesn't care about the individual statistics or the performances or what we may get in just watching sports. Sometimes you just get a team that just executes defense extremely well or puts on an offensive show that's still enjoyable despite the fact the score might be 44-10. All he wants is close games. That's it. And if they're not close games, it's a waste of time. And it just infuriates me because if you're a sports fan, you know the nuances of the game and you can really enjoy even games you don't have a rooting interest in. You can just sit back and enjoy the execution of the game. And I find myself agreeing with him tonight, watching these games in the Sweet 16. Even though the execution of some of these teams tonight was outstanding. And I don't think statistically, and I'm not a numbers guy, and I try not to bore you with all the detailed, minute numbers, but Villanova's offensive efficiency tonight was off the charts good. Their offensive efficiency tonight, they averaged 1.5 points per possession. That's unheard of. And they blew out a team I thought was going to the finals. I thought senior-laden, guard-driven Miami Hurricanes. And I was waiting for the other shoe to drop on Villanova because with Jay Wright's teams, they always drop. Some point in the tournament, Jay Wright's teams always drop that other shoe. But not tonight. Boy, and it was a beatdown. An absolute beatdown. And if they play like that, they're going to win the title. Because they'll lock you down defensively. But if they get, and I don't believe you could repeat that kind of offensive performance. But even if it's slightly off, they're going to be very, very difficult to knock out. Including the game upcoming on Saturday against Kansas. So Villanova was impressive. Oklahoma was impressive. They held the Aggies tonight to 34% shooting. Buddy Hield does what Buddy Hield does, a double-double. James Woodard, a guy we have heard over and over again from people who cover Oklahoma, who know Oklahoma. Hey, he's the second guy. Buddy Hield can have the 30 points. Buddy Hield can have 25. Buddy Hield can pull down a double-double. But you really want to look for a teammate that's working for the Sooners? James Woodard, you got to watch for him. He had 22. Kansas tonight took down a Maryland team that I thought was their engine just revved too hot the whole game. They kept that close early. It looked like Maryland was going to be able to hang in there with Kansas. But when you watched Maryland tonight, and I don't know if you saw the same thing I did, I saw a Maryland team that, again, was just revving the engine too high. And when you rev an engine too high, eventually it breaks and it cracks and it just is not efficient and it falls apart later in the race. You have to find a good cruising rhythm. And Maryland doesn't have a good cruising rhythm. And Kansas does. And when they're able to pull away, they're able to pull away. And Oregon tonight, they were, again, a kind of night that people expected from Oregon. And they put Duke away and did it in the second half. So these games didn't have the clutch three at the end with a minute to go or some rebound turn bucket with 5.6 seconds left on the clock. We didn't get any of that tonight. We got phenomenal performances by the top seeds. These were two ones, and they were two twos, and they're advancing. At least for today, because it can't happen tomorrow, Friday, chalk prevailed. One will go against two in Kansas and Villanova, and one will go against two in Anaheim when Oregon takes on Oklahoma. And you know what? That to me is as good of a matchup in the Elite Eight as I want as a basketball fan. I don't necessarily need a lower seed to get in and make it fun. This is going to be fun. If you watched Villanova play tonight, this game is going to be fun against Kansas. This is going to be great. Nova's defense, Kansas as complete as we've seen the Jayhawks. Buddy Hield, one of the most exciting players in the tournament, going up against Oregon, a team a lot of people don't know much about because a lot of people just don't stay up to watch them. Yeah, no, I didn't need a Stephen F. Austin in this thing, all right? No offense to them, but I'm glad I'm getting what I'm getting. But I do agree with my friend. I wish tonight had some punch. I wish tonight had drama. I wish tonight was a night where we walk away going, wow, I love basketball. If you really love the game, you could walk away tonight saying that, especially if you watch the way Villanova played. Like I mentioned, offensive efficiency was incredible. But I think people like this tournament because there are surprises. I think people like this tournament because it's expect the unexpected. And with parity, where it feels like there's parity, you got to match up 3-2. 3-2 in the West as well. 4-1, 5-1. These were close teams. I mean, these weren't teams. This Kansas wasn't head and shoulders better than Maryland. And Maryland had some flaws, and a lot of people didn't really like the direction that they were going, but it wasn't like Kansas was playing a 9 seed. Duke was the defending champs. They were going up against Oregon, who led a Pac-12 that bowed out of this thing as quick as they got in it. Miami, I had Miami getting to the finals, losing to Oklahoma. But I loved Miami. I said yesterday, I am going to take Miami as far as I can take them. You know, it ended tonight. And Texas A&M, as the elation of beating Northern Iowa led to falling apart against Oklahoma. So I wish it had some punch tonight. It didn't. What was the most impressive thing tonight? 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Frank Schwab is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Talk some NFL. A lot to get to. It's like a rapid fire session with Frank. Rule changes, Robert Kraft, and of course, Robert Griffin III, who we're going to dive into. Cleveland Browns have got a quarterback again. How many, Adam, does this make? How many on that jersey, the famous quarterback jersey now, throwing Robert Griffin Jr., Robert Griffin III's name on that thing? I mean, a million? What are we up to, 635 quarterbacks that have played for the Cleveland Browns? Come on. This is going to be good, though. I think it's good for him. I don't know if it's good for the Browns. I don't know. Maybe he's terrible and the Browns regret it. I think for him, it's a good paying gig. He got some good money out of Cleveland. And, you know, sometimes you just need to get out and get a fresh start. If he stays healthy, he's going to have another chance. If he fails at this, then the book is going to be written. I never like to see a book written on a guy after just, you know, some injuries plague him and he doesn't get his form back and then there's pressure and, you know, the coach doesn't want you and you just run into so many problems. But you go to another team, if you turn it around, there you go. If Colin Kaepernick goes somewhere else and turns it around, oh, heck, if he turns it around under Chip Kelly, then he gets a second act. A lot of people don't get second acts. And RG3 is getting one. And Hugh Jackson is a great coach. This should work. On paper, this should work. But there's something about the Browns. There's something about the Browns where it's like cursed. That position is like cursed. They've had some good quarterbacks go there and just fall apart. Or they've had quarterbacks that have started off playing well and then played so poorly that you just saw them disappear off the radar. It has been a lot of quarterbacks. That team coming back in 1999 has had a lot of starting quarterbacks. But and look, if you're a Cleveland Browns fan and you're cynical, I get it. I get it, too. We'll talk more about RG3 coming up. Also getting into a little bit more on the LeBron James, because I'm going to go a whole week talking LeBron, because this guy's killing me. But there's an actual twist to the LeBron James story that we're going to get to. A little bit of, hey, somebody taking it to LeBron. They lost to Brooklyn pretty bad tonight. He didn't even score in the fourth quarter. But coming up next, the Cleveland Browns and RG3. What does this mean for the second pick in the draft? Well, I'll tell you what I think it means next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
A little bit of news from producer Adam, who tells me that Grayson Allen did not hug Dylan Brooks at the end of the game because of a Dylan Brooks made a three-pointer with like no time left, with 10 seconds left.
Yeah, eight, he knocked eight down a seconds, three-pointer. Yep.
Well, what happened was, okay, so Oregon had the ball with about, I don't know, 30 seconds left. And they're winding down the shot clock. And it's one of those moments where they can't run out the clock. They have to do something with the ball. So they either just shoot it or they have to turn it over. A shot clock violation. So Dylan Brooks had the ball. And as the shot clock was winding down, he hucked up a really long three. It wasn't on the line. And it looked like he just kind of threw it up there. And because it was late in the game, I mean, I wasn't really paying that much attention, but it looked odd. And then when it went in, I kind of went, oh, look, he made that. Like you would with Steph Curry when he's knocking him down from half court. Well, apparently after the game, Brooks tried to give, you know, Grayson Allen a little, you know, hey, man, a good game, man. And Grayson Allen wanted nothing to do with this.
He basically ducked out of the way of his hand.
Oh, that's awful. Oh, well. And then Coach K apparently said something to Brooks like, you know, you shouldn't be shooting that on us.
He said, Dylan Brooks said after the game, Coach K told him in the handshake line, I'm too good of a player to be showing off at the end. That's what Coach K said to him.
That might be legit. But I don't think he was.
I have no problem with this.
I got to see the video. I got to remember where he shot this from, because I thought it was a really long shot. I thought it was, look, it's not like they were rolling it around the perimeter and then as the shot clock expired, he was like wide open for three, knocks it down. Like, no, it was like he just kind of had the ball and the shot clock was winding down. He just went whoop and threw it up and it went in. And while that's showing off, I don't think he's really trying to make it. I think he's just throwing it up there. And letting the clock, you know, hit the rim, and then Duke gets the ball, and the clock runs out, and they win the game. Could it be, though, that Allen was actually mad because he had a terrible basketball game?
Okay, I just saw the video.
Okay.
You know the big, it says regional, right in the middle of the court?
Yeah.
He basically was on that, just off it to the left. So he was that far out.
That's right. He was really far out.
Yeah, he's 40 plus feet out, and he just, there's 1 second left, he shot it, like you said, just nonchalantly took the three with 1 second left, and it went in. That's not showboating one bit.
He is not trying to make that shot.
No.
He is not trying to make that. He is just throwing it up there, and then, you know, the thought process is, all right, we don't want the violation. For whatever reason, you don't want, it doesn't matter, but you don't want the violation. Chuck it up. The ball bounces off the rim. They get it. They run out the clock. Game's over. It went in. I bet you he was like, oh, crap. I bet you $1 million when he went in, he was like, ah, it's not going to look good.
I'm blanking on his name. Oregon head coach.
Oh, Dan Altman.
Yes. He clearly points at him and does like a shooting motion to shoot the ball.
Yeah, just throw it up there.
100%. Like, just watched him completely. He points at him and does like a shot, like hold it up, and kid takes the shot then.
Nice job, Coach K.
Yeah, so if you want to yell at somebody, yell at Dana Altman. But still,
lackluster performance against a Pac-12 team.
If you didn't have Brandon Ingram, your team would be awful.
Yeah. Why don't you yell at them for defending the title so valiantly? But they lost by, 14 points tonight? Come on.
And if anybody's going to be like ducking people, Grayson Allen's not the guy who should be doing it. Considering this is the kid who has been caught, four times this season, purposely tripping players during games?
Is that why he's mad? Is that because he didn't get to stomp on anybody's chest illegally or trip somebody and kick them while they're down? Or just rob a child of their ice cream? Is that why he's upset?
I think this is a complete joke. I don't think it should be a story. But yes, it's Coach K. First of all, it's not Coach K's right to say anything to this kid.
He should keep his mouth shut.
It's not his player.
I wish Dana Altman had the stones to say that. Like, yeah. You know what? We respect Coach K for what he's done to basketball, but mind your own damn business and take care of your own team before you start lecturing my players. Like, Duke has never ran up a score on anybody in the history of their program.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
you big child.
Yeah, I'd be like, worry about your kids tripping people and, you know, doing the stuff they've done over the years. And instead of my kid shooting a three from 45 feet out and it happens to go in with 1 second left on the shot clock at the end of a game.
What's the matter? Would you have 12 points to cover and that kind of blew your bet there, Coach K?
Something.
Oh, my God. He knocked down a three with no time. That's awful. That is a childish act.
The more I like look at it now and think about it, it's like the worse it gets.
Yeah, right.
You know, like when I first saw it, I was like, oh, that's, you know, kind of funny, whatever. Coach K shouldn't really say anything, but whatever. And it's like every passing second, I'm just like, just getting more mad about it.
And I like Coach K too, but that's childish. Stop acting like that. Duke lost. Everybody should celebrate.
Okay, if this kid just went up and did like a windmill dunk with 8 seconds left, then yes, 100%, I would agree with it.
Absolutely. In fact, when we talked about it during the break, I was like, well, that seems legit. Then you start thinking about it. I go, wait a minute. He wasn't trying to make the three. He just tried to throw it up as the shot clock expired, for crying out loud.
And now, listen, especially, he was doing what his coach said.
Exactly. That's the other thing, too. Because here's where Mike Krzyzewski's brilliance as a head coach has always been, right? Watch him on the sidelines in the beginning of the season when Duke is beating up like Chattanooga, okay? Or somebody else like that. There are situations where Coach K will call timeout up by 15 with 3 minutes left because he wants to set up something, or he wants to continue coaching. He's not trying to show up the other team, but he wants them to understand certain situations because they may come in tight ACC games. And the teams he plays, when he beats up High Point, they understand that. So that's always been the brilliance of Mike Krzyzewski. And I'm not saying in this situation that Dana Altman was coaching like, hey, you know, when the clock winds down. But Dana Altman is also training his kids to do exactly what they're told on the court, no matter what. That they're not supposed to have a mind of their own in certain situations. They call the right, they call the play that comes in. They do what the coach wants them to do. So. You know, Brooks having the ball 40 feet away from the basket and his coach says, throw it up. He throws it up. He's not supposed to say, well, I'd really like to, but instead I'll just take the shot clock violation. I mean, he's doing what his coach wants him to do. And if I was Dana Altman, that's exactly what I'd say. I'd say, we respect Coach K, but mind your own business.
Brooks did say after what, you know, once he told the reporters what Coach K said to him, he's like, I'll take in what he said, but I'm going to keep doing me. That's what he did say. So that's kind of nice.
That is nice. That's good. Oh, God. Mike Krzyzewski. Just another long line of tournament stuff.
It just seems so, like, just like you said, sour grapes.
Like, yeah.
Just upset they lost the game, and it's like, let's find something to just make a story about instead of us just going out and nobody really talking about it.
Boy, and tell you right now, Oregon, I was talking earlier about how Villanova looked good. Oregon did look good.
They did. I know there's talent there, but I did not expect it. I thought they'd win the game, but I did not expect them to look like they did.
Oh, I know. I know. I got it. Like I said earlier, like, you didn't get close games tonight, but you got really impressive performances.
Yes, there was actually good
really
basketball.
Excited. Yeah.
I've complained really all week good. About bad basketball, and this night was very good basketball.
I've always been a Jay Wright fan. I've always liked Jay Wright, but I've hated some of the teams that he's had. And now I really like this Villanova team. Yeah, especially after they beat the Miami team I fell in love with yesterday. Let me just go with the tide. Tony D, we'll talk to Frank Schwab in the NFL next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, you know, we've been getting this so much NFL news this week, so we got to put it all in a package. We bring in Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner to help us process all this stuff from the owners meeting and RG3. How you doing, my man?
When is there a week when there's not a lot of NFL news?
I mean,
it's just we talk about it all the time, man, and it's so true. The league does such an amazing job keeping itself at the forefront. I mean, March Madness is going on right now, but I bet that right now if I went to Twitter or Facebook or whatever, RG3 is probably trending. So, hey,
it's more power RG3, to the NFL. Touchback rule, kicking guys out of the game.
People talking about how they've changed the horse collar rule over whether North Carolina can win a national title. It amazes me sometimes, but hey, it's great because we're always talking NFL, and that's great. That's a good thing.
All right, let's get to the rule changes. This touchback thing, everybody is saying, hey, this is just going to lead to more kickoffs. This is not going to do what you want it to do. Guys are going to just drop kick those bad boys in between the 10 and the end zone. Do you think this lasts? Do you think that's what's going to come about?
I don't know. I think that maybe it's one of those knee-jerk overreactions. Like, you think about it and like, oh, yeah, we're going to have a lot of pop-up kicks and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, a couple teams, it's not easy to do necessarily. Once teams get burned a couple times, they might be thinking, hey, we have an easy touchback. Let's just take that. They get a couple extra yards. Fine. We want to just kick it out of the end of the end zone and they can start there. So I don't know, but I think we'll see some of it. I think definitely we'll see some teams trying to get cute and whatnot, but I also wonder just at the end of the day if this isn't going to have the big impact we talk about here in the late March when there's not a lot else to talk about.
Same with the double unsportsmanlike conduct rule. Now I'm hearing, oh, well, now they'll be targeting. Now people will be trying to goad people into that extra unsportsmanlike penalty. Don't they do that now? Is that a big concern, too?
Absolutely. I think that the stat that's gone around is of all last season, there would have been one guy to get ejected from this rule. Like, we're not talking about when Roger Goodell first said it at the Super Bowl, I thought, oh my goodness, all personal fouls? Like, you get two face mask penalties and you're out of a game? That's ridiculous. And then it's like, no, let's take a step back. This is like, you know, two of your unnecessary roughness type of egregious personal foul penalty. Even Odell Beckham wouldn't have been kicked out of the game last year against Josh Norman. Like, that's what we're talking. We're talking about something that is going to happen once in the blue moon. And you know what? When it does happen, that guy's probably going to deserve it. Like, I don't think there's going to be any times when we're saying, wow, that guy got kicked out of a game, and it was because of this stupid technicality. We need to change the rules. I think if a guy gets kicked out over this rule, we're all going to say, yep, he earned it. He deserved to get kicked out. So I think it's actually fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with it now that I've actually gotten to see, oh, this is what they're talking about. This is what the rules. It's very specific. We're not just talking about personal fouls, roughing the passer or something like that. Where the guys who get ejected, they're gonna earn that ejection.
All right, Robert Griffin III signing with Cleveland. Hugh Jackson is there. Is that a good marriage? Do you think it'll work out for both?
I think it's good for RG3 in this case. I think that Hugh Jackson is a good coach, and he is going to help him. And I think that box gets checked. Did you find a coach who's going to help you develop? Yes, you absolutely did. But other than that, I don't see where this really benefits RG3. Let's think about this. The Cleveland Browns have the second pick of the draft. And maybe they pass out a quarterback second or in the second round. Maybe they just hate this quarterback class. But if you're the Cleveland Browns, you do not. I should say the Cleveland Browns. Who knows what they're going to do? Because we never know what the Cleveland Browns are going to do. But if you're a legitimate, rightfully thinking NFL franchise, you don't say, "Well, we really like Carson Wentz, but now we got RG3, so we're not going to draft him." Of course not. I mean, RG3 hasn't shown anything in 3 years. You're still probably going to draft a quarterback number two. I think we all expect that. So now you look back to RG3's case. What are his possible positive outcomes here? The second pick of the draft is not going to sit a long time. We all know this. He probably isn't even going to sit. I mean, maybe he sits week one, but it's not going to be too much further past that. I mean, even Blake Bortles, who was the last guy who we thought was going to sit a year, sat, what, four games? The number two pick is going to play. And there's going to be intense pressure. Every time RG3 screws up, the people are going to be calling for Carson Wentz or Jared Goff or whoever the second pick was. So if you're RG3... what do you get, a handful of starts, and then you back up Carson Wentz for the rest of the year, and then you got a team option for next year, too, and you get back up Carson Wentz again? I just don't see how this turns out well for RG3 if we're talking about him turning around his career and becoming a legitimate starter again. And I know he didn't have many other options to start anywhere else, I don't know if he would have just been better off going to, say, a Seattle and learning the game and developing that way and maybe get your shot. I just don't see how this turns out really positively for RG3.
Frank Schwab joins us, Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner, as we go around the NFL. Jerry Jones, I don't think it was as madness as people think. I think Jerry Jones is the messenger of a league that has to send that CTE message, even if it sounds crazy, even if it sounds dumb. It seems like that's something the league kind of right now has to do, and seems like Jerry Jones is the right messenger. Am I reading that right?
I don't think you're wrong, because Jerry Jones is the most powerful owner. We've seen that time and time and time again. So this isn't some, you know, random owner who we haven't heard from in months and months saying, this is Jerry Jones. And, you know, everybody knows the clout he has in the league. And, you know, everybody jumped on his case. And I'm not saying that they're not wrong, but they're also, Eric Adelson of Yahoo Sports did an excellent article this week. And I really, if you care about the issue, go and search up, you know, fear in football and CTE. And it basically, Eric talks about how many medical professionals said the same thing Jerry Jones did. They said, look, we just don't know. We don't know that there's a link between CTE and football. There's not enough data yet. And whether we agree or disagree with that, it's an important issue. It's important to look at that side of things, too. And Eric Adelson wrote about Todd Ewan, the former NHL enforcer, who was worried he had CTE and he killed himself, and it found out he didn't have CTE. He was just depressed. And you wonder, does this panic about CTE and how much we've heard about it, does that cause more problems? And Eric really expertly wrote about this in the story. And so going back to Jerry, when he says something like that, he's not out on a limb there. There are medical professionals who are saying this too. So I think that, you know, we're still, this whole issue, Tony, is so nuanced that I don't think we're close to really having that answer, like, you know, the definitive answer, how to prevent this, how to help guys, how much of a impact there is. I think we all agree that there's some impact, but there's just a lot of unanswered questions at this point. I think that's what Jerry Jones was trying to point out.
I think this is great. We're doing a lot of cool rapid fire stuff, Frank. This is fantastic. I got one more. Robert Kraft, he writes this letter. He wants his picks back. He wants his money back. Roger Goodell says, no, I'm not doing it. Everyone's like, yeah, Robert Kraft took a shot. In the end, if he's got this Wells report that has no evidence whatsoever, isn't Kraft correct in saying, you took away everything from us for essentially no reason?
Yes, he is. And if he wants to just bring that into the forefront every now and then, he had to have known.
Absolutely.
Had to have known, Tony. There's no chance. There's no, like, the NFL hasn't changed its mind. Like, that's the thing. We can sit here, me and you and a federal judge out in New York and Robert Kraft, Tom Brady and his lawyers and the NFLPA, we can all sit here and say, yeah, the Wells report is dumb. The NFL has never said that. The NFL has never changed its mind. It's never waffled. It's never strayed from this thought that, hey, we were right. And all these punishments, we were right. Even the Brady thing are appealing. So, and for Kraft, obviously knows he wasn't going to get his way there. Like, that just wasn't going to happen. Kraft screwed this up. That's the thing that, I mean, I think we all kind of at least think at some level, Kraft thought he was going to get a favor in the end. Kraft thought that Goodell was going to go light on Brady. And that didn't happen. You know, he had to defend him, just had to bail him out there. But Kraft screwed this up. He never should have given this. I'm of a full belief that after reading the Wells report, I have no idea why Robert Kraft gave up. I think that he should have fought this to the end. I don't know if he would have won or not, but once you give up, you give up. Like, that's it. You've given away your draft pick. Nothing's going to take you, bring it back. So, and that's a severe penalty. It really was overdone, and I don't think fair at all. But once you do it, you do it, and there's just no turning back on that road. There's no U-turn there.
Frank Schwab, Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner. I ran out of time. Otherwise, I'd say congratulations on Wisconsin. Good run.
Oh, man. Bronson Koenig. He's my hero today. Yeah, I love him.
Frank, always good talking to you, my friend.
I appreciate it, man.
All right, we're going to dissect what Frank was saying about the NFL, the rule changes, the Brady situation, where the Goodell power structure lies. That's all coming up next, including what we think about RG3 with the Cleveland Browns. I'll tell you what that pick is all about now for Cleveland. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
You're what does the signing of Robert Griffin III mean for the Cleveland Browns and that number two pick in the draft? I hope, this is what I think, I hope it doesn't mean anything. I hope they still take a quarterback. You can't, are you all in on Robert Griffin III? I mean, look, I like RG3. I'm not one of these anti-RG3 guys. I thought he was exciting and fun. I thought the league got the best of him. Injuries hurt him. I thought his system didn't fit what he was trying to do. I thought his coach didn't believe in him. There were a lot of circumstances with the Redskins that led to Robert Griffin III not being the same player that he was in 2012. A lot. Injuries, coach, et cetera. A bunch of things. Sometimes you need a fresh start. But still, I think if you're the Browns, you've got to be smart. You've got to be reasonable here. And you've got to be football smart. There's a lot of things the Browns need. Don't get me wrong. But when you have the number two pick in the draft, as Frank said, you got to take quarterback. And you've got to get that quarterback ready to go and be the franchise. Listen, there is nothing better in this league than knowing you have a guy. And I'll tell you right now, living in Nashville, the Titans world is 1,000 times better, even though they are a flawed, flawed mess. But the outlook is 1,000 times better, and it all has to do with the fact that Marcus Mariota is the quarterback. And we don't even know how good Mariota is going to be 3 or 4 years from now. But today, it doesn't matter. Because on March 25th, the feeling in Nashville is, hey, we got a quarterback. We've got the quarterback. There's no cloud over his head. There is no, well, he's got this 1 year to really prove himself, or, oh, I don't know about this guy. No, the feeling is they drafted him. He worked out well last year. He's learning. He's growing. He showed skills. And you know what? The future is in good hands. People in Jacksonville feel the same exact thing about Blake Bortles. There are things you want to fix on your team, absolutely. Maybe you need a better pass rush. Maybe you need a corner. Maybe you need a good offensive line. Maybe you need a running back. Who knows? Maybe you need a better wide receiver. All of that is so true with all the teams that are picking around this spot. But when you have a quarterback in place, when you feel like that position is secure, your outlook is great. I would much rather have a team that has got a solid quarterback and needs a lot of things around that quarterback than a team that is missing that position, but everything else is good. I know it sounds crazy that I'd rather be the Tennessee Titans than the old Houston Texans, but I'd rather be the Tennessee Titans than the old Houston Texans. Even in Houston, you've got your guy. Feel a little good about it. And I think in Cleveland, I don't think this is the signing that makes people go, yeah. Look at the huge list. A lot of those guys that played for the Browns were brought in with the same idea. Oh, this guy's going to work out great. Then it doesn't. And I understand what you're saying. I understand when people say, look, yeah, but Tony, if you draft Carson Wentz or you draft Jared Goff or you draft, you know, whoever you take with that two pick, The Browns have drafted quarterbacks, too, that didn't work out. And I understand. But if one of these guys shows the kind of skills that you need in an NFL quarterback, then you get him. Let him sit or let him compete for the position or let RG3. I don't know how you want to work it. He's getting paid a lot of money to go to Cleveland. Which, by the way, hats off to his agent. Because I thought Robert Griffin III was going to have to take, you know, a decent salary. He got a good check. He's getting a good check from the Cleveland Browns. So, in that regard, I hope the Browns aren't already in love with RG3 and say, oh, you know what we'll do with that pick? We'll trade it for a bunch of other picks. Or we'll draft to this position or draft. Get your quarterback. You're going to be so much better off. The fan base is going to feel a whole lot better if they feel like there's a really good, smart young kid, not a wild card like Johnny Manziel, a legit pro prospect that's got size, skills, smarts, can throw. That's what you want. That's what you want. Believe me, look, the Tennessee Titans have their quarterback, but they're picking number one for a reason. They're a terrible football team. But nobody feels like that the future is in complete despair. In fact, they hired a coach nobody wanted. That nobody was like, oh, yay. And yet the feeling is, yeah, but Marcus Mariota, love watching him play. Gonna be excited where this is heading. Jameis Winston, we don't know how Jameis Winston's going to be, but they feel good in Tampa Bay about it. To draft a quarterback, Cleveland Browns. And like I said earlier tonight, I'm an RG3 guy. I'm not a huge fan, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's going to be a superstar pro bowler again, but I liked him. I just liked him. And I always have a sort of a feeling for guys that are misrepresented so much. I think RG3 was misrepresented a lot in the media. And there's just a soft spot in my heart for guys like that. And I still cannot believe years later, I mean, we're going to be 4 years removed from the famous what in the world was Mike Shanahan doing, leaving him out there in that playoff game moment. You remember that? Against Seattle, where RG3 was practically on crutches. He was like, keep playing. And I'm like, what? What are you doing? This guy can barely stand. And that was just the beginning of the end for Shanahan and RG3 in Washington, D.C. You know, by the way, D.C. is a tough place to be a quarterback. Look, that is a great football area. I mean, it is a really great football area. I remember years ago, my buddy was going to college there at American University. Then I remember going to visit him while I was at South Carolina. And I went in the fall, and I remember being on the train with him in D.C., and everybody was yapping about the quarterback. I think it was Jay Schroeder who was quarterback at the time, but I mean, just the train was buzzing about complaining about him or arguing about him. It's just a great football area. Redskins have got a good fan base up and down the East Coast. All right, 800-777-2907. Coming up, my daily rant on LeBron, but this time it's different, I promise. I'm not going to just repeat the same old stuff. There's actually a twist to this story, a real twist. Hey, LeBron, can we come and talk? Because we need to talk. And I thought it was great. I'll tell you why next. Yahoo Sports Radio.